Witchy Hour!
You're listening to I Met Witchy Hour.
Metal Messiah freaks, fucks, bitches and whores, and little tiny dicks. Welcome to IPEX Witching Hour on another special topic. Tonight, I will be talking to my good man, the mastermind, guitar player, very unique vocalist, none other than Kirk Weinstein. And we'll be talking about his past and present bands, which involves Crowbar, Dawn, and Kingdom Sorrow. And he's a sludge metal legend. Back in the 90s, they were very, very popular. And Headbangers Ball was playing their music just about every weekend, and even Beavis and Butthead trying to fuck with their video. All right, stick around. The interview is coming up. Again, you fucking kiddies, if you don't know Crowbar, I know you know Down because everybody fucking loves Phil Anselmo and Jamie Josta Hatebreed, which is now with Kirk, is a new band, Kingdom of Sorrow. So now you got the whole fucking metal history. Metal Messiah Radio. You are on IPEX Switching Hour. Time to fucking shut the fuck up and listen the talk with Kirk.
So with your permission, and I'm going to turn the recording on. And Kirk, anything you say may or will be used
against you in court of law.
Not a problem.
Tonight's very special guest is Kirk Weinstein, mastermind of... Yeah, I wanted to make sure that I pronounce your name because you're very anal about that, right?
I'm actually not. I'm so used to it being mispronounced.
I know. I was told.
I don't even brag. You know, I'm just like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, so I was told that there was another interviewer. Make sure you pronounce his name correctly because somebody called you Weinstein.
Weinstein. Weinstein. it's very
German, actually. It's very German.
It is. Everybody thinks I'm. Everybody in America thinks I'm Jewish. I'm like, no,
I know.
I was raised Roman Catholic. I went to Catholic school.
Right.
It's German.
So you're not even Jewish, but you inherit it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, mm-hmm. My dad did some family tree research, and apparently in the fucking, you know, 14 or 1500s or something, there was like a Lord Weinstein
shit.
In Germany, so we had some German royalty or some shit back then.
Is it mean anything? I know wind, and then Stein.
I don't know. I think Stein's stone or something.
Oh,
I don't know.
Really? That's awesome.
Or storm, like windstorm or something. I'm not sure.
I like it. Okay. Yeah.
Kind of heavy
stuff. So I'm going to just give an introduction to our moron fans. May not know. Mastermind of Crowbar and guitarist, singer, and guitarist for Down and Kingdom of Sorrow, and much more, of course. Now, last night, I was watching the video I told you earlier, so I went out and I bought it, the diary of Mad Band. Did I have to see your fucking balls sitting and shitting?
Everybody keeps saying that. I haven't even looked at it yet.
Oh,
everybody.
My God. My boyfriend is like, close your eyes. I said, what?
What is it? What is it? It's just my
is
balls.
That, that's
there?
In England. You're in a toilet and you're shitting. And I just...
Oh, I'm sure that's a lovely sight.
Oh, my God. I said... Oh, my God, his balls are hanging out. You know, Kirk, you got small balls for a big man. No, I'm just kidding.
Actually, my wife's constantly like, Jesus Christ, you need a sack lift. they fucking hang too well.
I know, they were hanging. I said, oh my God. And so I was like laughing my ass off, but it was a lot of fun. So I really enjoyed it. I would recommend everybody fucking go get it, watch it, the back scene. Especially now you got the Snake Sabo from Skid Row. He's managing down. And you were doing his hair. You're massaging his head. You know, it's great. You know, Phil is laying down on the couch as usual. I don't know whether he's tired or he's high. He can't open his eyes open.
possibly both. I think it was after the show, so it was more tired.
Yeah, yeah. But I fucking loved it. Your guitar sound was perfect.
Oh,
and
killer.
It was so killer. I couldn't keep my eyes off of your guitar playing. It was so beautiful, you know?
You
play what, the Gibson?
It's ESP, but
ESP?
It's Gibson copies.
Oh, exactly.
It's like SG copies, the Vipers I play.
Right, I was paying attention. So how many guitars do you own?
At this moment, about 15, 16, something like that.
Okay, and which one is your most favorite one?
Well, I mean, my first guitar ever was, my first electric guitar was, it's a 1978.
Kramer?
No, Les Paul, Black Les Paul Custom.
Okay.
That my parents bought from me because, well, what happened is, Ace Frehley used a Les Paul, so I had to have a Les Paul.
Exactly.
That was my first guitar guy. And as did Jimmy Page, you know, so.
Right. Rest in peace, Les Paul just died last year, right?
Right. Yeah, it was like last year. Yeah, he was still gigging.
I know.
Gigging every Monday in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
But God bless him. But yeah, I had to have a Les Paul. And lucky for me, my father's cousin's husband worked for Gibson, Norland, which was a company in the 70s that they had Pearl drums, Gibson guitars, and like Moog synthesizers and everything, Moog brand or Moog, whatever it is, synthesizers. And because he was like a dealer for the Gibson guitars, I was able to get one at like cost, you know, so my family didn't have to dish out.
Right.
It was for the real price. He got it to me, you know, like as a favor to the family.
You got the wholesale price instead of, you know.
Exactly. So, you know, it was a cost thing or whatever.
But
so
now you're, of course, endorsed by whom?
ESP.
ESP. Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
I think, who else plays ESP?
James and Kirk from Metallica. What's his name? Doggone it. Gus G. Ozzy's new guy.
Oh, from the Oz. Yeah. Ozzy. Okay.
Ozzy,
Gus G.
He's got ESP. I mean, a lot of the.
Yeah. George Lynch probably plays them too.
Yeah. Lynch. Lynch made, Lynch, you know, he Lynch. Played them back in the 80s and still does them.
Exactly.
Yeah,
he still does. It's pretty good. I don't know what's the young generation. They're always like either Ibanez, and now the Schecters are well known. For
the Schecters are getting well known. I mean, the Avenged Sevenfold guys, you know, have them and have their own brands.
You like Jackson?
Yeah, what's that?
Jacksons. You like?
Yes,
Jackson?
I actually do. I own a couple.
Yeah, they got the good
one. I'm pretty much like. Actually, I have two Kramers that are Gibson SG copies as well. It was kind of like a weird thing. I bought one. I'm an eBay guy with guitars. Like,
oh, really?
You know, I do sell some of mine. Like, if it's one that I'm just like, you know what, I'm never going to play this again, I'll sell it, and then I'll buy another one on eBay. Like, I bought... I bought B.C. Rich Mockingbird.
B.C. Rich, I love B.C. Rich, yeah.
Yeah, me too. I wanted one forever, and it was like, you know what? I was with my ex-wife at the time, you know, my little girl's mother.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, look, you know, just sell one of your, you know, we can afford it, but she's like, you know, sell one you're not going to use and get one. So I sold one of mine, and then I bid and bought, you know, a Mockingbird that I had been wanting, which I still have. I still use that around the house. You know.
Do you play six string or seven?
Oh no, so always six for me.
Okay.
And my terminology or my way of thinking on that is I've been tuning to B since 1988.
Oh, okay.
and drop tuning to A.
So oh my God, that's really
cool.
They
didn't really have, you know, 7-string guitars back then. So
no.
I just made the 6-string one work, and now the 7-string thing. I'm not trained as a musician. Like I have
you're
no
like the street
training.
Yeah, you learn off, you know, basic.
Just by ear.
Play by ear.
Yeah.
Tonight, I am going to ask a few questions. Some of the fans message me, and there's one guy, he is so cool. You know, he's a young guitar player. He's in Iraq. And if you can give him a little shout, he says to me, I'm really big fan of Crowbar and Down. Can you tell Kirk to say hello to the old soldiers in Iraq fighting for our country? And his name is Trent Parsons.
Trent Parsons, no problem. This is a shout out to all the soldiers in Iraq fighting for our country, and especially to Trent Parsons.
Oh, you gave me a chills and goosebumps. And the next person I have is Jet. She's a sexy mama, and she's on DJ for this program. And she has so many questions, and I said, girl, you can only ask one question. She had like 7-10, so I'm going to... So give her an ID shot, too. Her name is Jet, and she has her own show. So if you can just say, hey, sexy mama Jet, this is Kirk, you know, and listen to Jet's Metal Messiah Radio.
Hey, sexy mama Jet, this is Kirk Wolfenstein, and make sure, everyone, to listen to sexy mama Jet's Metal Messiah Radio.
Perfect. Okay, she asked me, let's see, I'm not sure which one is the first. She said that, does he travel with the personal dietitian on the road to keep him healthy? And then she goes, LOL, what does he do to stay healthy and not get sick on the road?
Well, now I don't drink, so that helps.
Cool.
It's no secret. I'm a bit of a burly man. But, you know, over the last course of the last 4 or 5 years, I've actually lost quite a bit of weight. I really do eat healthy on the road.
I noticed that you look so fucking healthy, your big arms. You know, you look beautiful, you're energized. I saw you, you're banging your head, you're moving around. So it really made me happy that see you healthy, happy again.
Yeah, I mean at home I go back and forth, you know, but right now I'm back into my gym rat phase.
Awesome.
Where, I mean, like today I did 40 minutes on the elliptical trainer, which is, you know, for a 45-year-old guy with two bad knees.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty good, you know. So, I mean, the elliptical kicks your ass.
I know, I have that. I have that. If you fucking, you can last for 20 minutes, you're a good.
I did 40. I burned 426 calories today. So.
Did you really? That's awesome. Because I hate the treadmill. I hate treadmill.
Yeah, well, the treadmill, actually, my knees are shot from, you know.
Yeah.
I power lifted, played football, ran track my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was very in, you know, the U.S. pool. I mean, you know, American football as well as, you know, track and field and weightlifting. And, you know, I'm fucking 45, you know, so, I mean, my knees are shot from, and, you know, my shoulders are shot, whatever. I can't lift heavy anymore, but I still love lifting. I love working out.
Right.
And, you know, on the road, I always lose weight.
That's
because
good.
I really do eat very, very healthy, mainly
right.
Vegetarian on the road.
Good.
You know, I mean,
no
like,
alcohol. Even though I know you're going to be around a bunch of fucking musicians that are going to be drinking, it's going to be hard for you to resist, you know, the temptation.
Oh, absolutely. But I've been gigging and you know, down in the Louisiana, Texas area, and I've really been enjoying it. And it's really fun to play absolutely sober again. I drink non-alcoholic beer, you know, which is...
I mean, do they know that you are actually, you know, dieting on alcohol and not to offer you anything? You know, do they say, oh, come on, Kirk, one shot, whatever?
Oh, know, I mean, a couple of them do. A lot of them aren't aware that I'm doing. You know,
right. Quitting the alcohol.
So they'll be like, hey man, I gotta get you a shot. Can I buy you a beer? And I'm
right.
Like,
no.
Dude, I have, you know, free, I drink O'Doul's, you know, or whatever,
exactly.
Whatever they might
good.
Have. I'm like, no, I got a case of O'Doul's in the dressing room.
Awesome.
And it, you know what? It fills a void. It allows me to be in the environment of being in a bar, or being in a venue, being in a party situation where, you know.
Man, let me ask you, I know there's no alcohol in the drink. Now,
correct.
When you drink, is it like a psychologically... Does
absolutely.
It tell? Is it?
You get a fake buzz. You get a placebo. You feel it. It feels like you drank like
case of
beer. It feels like you drank maybe like one pint of real beer, and that's it.
But you're not getting any buzz.
No, but you have a little bit of a placebo buzz. I call it. You know, it's a mental thing that you're in a bar. You're
maybe it's a different buzz, like maybe a caffeine type of buzz.
Right, right. It's definitely it's different, you know. But I mean, you know, so far, you know, it's working out really well for me.
Good, good. I mean, as long as it helps you. Like me, on the other hand, I mean, I don't like even fucking decaf. You know, it's got to be I can tell. I can taste. The
right.
Decaffeinated coffee between there's a difference, and I can taste the beer with no alcohol, or you know, because
right.
You know, obviously you start slurring, you're talking, you're happy. Like at this moment, I'm drinking some what is it called? A Blue Moon Winter Abbey.
A white drink,
but this is dark. It's a Abbey Ale, the winter one. It's a really dark, little thick, you know, heavy. But it's good. But I don't have an alcohol problem, so I'm not worried. So once I'm done with the one, I hit the sack. You know what I mean? I don't have an urge to keep drinking, you know, which is
yeah.
A good thing. The Jet, again, the Sexy Mama, is asking another question is, how the hell Kirk meet Jamie Josta, and how was the Kingdom of Sorrow formed? What was the goal they had in mind when forming the band?
Well, first question would be, I met Jamie when he was still a teenager. I'm like 15 years older than him, something like that. 14 years. I know he's been 30 for like 3 years.
Right.
So I really
right.
don't know how old he is, but
still a junior.
Well, he's much younger than me. So
right.
He was a huge Crowbar fan. You know, really, really huge Crowbar fans. One of his favorite bands ever.
Mm-hmm.
And we met, you know, years ago, and we, you know, didn't really know one another very well. But when Hatebreed did the 2005 UK tour, they asked Crowbar to be main support for the tour, and we said, of course. And the tour was great. Me and Jamie really hit it off, and we, you know, we discussed forming a band together. And it usually never comes to fruition. Normally, people in bands
right.
talk about doing it, and you know, especially like Jamie was still drinking then. He got off of alcohol later that year, later in 2000, like October
mm-hmm.
or something, I think
right.
2005. So he was still drinking, you know, pretty heavily, as was I, of course. So you know, we're a bunch of drunken, you know.
Dysfunctional.
Yeah, we talked about the band thing, and I'm like,
right.
great, great, great. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, he calls me like in April or May of 05. I think April, and he's
2005.
Like, hey, man, you want to get this side band thing going? And I'm like, wow, I'm sure, sounds good. You know, and he's like, well, you want to, you know, you got some free time? I said, yeah, when can you
sure.
be here? I'm like, ASAP, you know. So I went up to Connecticut, and, you know, we worked on some stuff, and it took us a while. I mean, we completed the record in September of 05, and, you know, kind of set on it and took a while shopping for the proper deal and everything. But it came out really, really, you know, we're very proud of the first record as well, obviously, of the new record, Behind the Blackest Years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's now a situation where he's basically managing Crowbar. So
awesome. Now, do you
worked out well?
Yeah, it sounds really, really fucking cool. You did some vocals in that album too, right?
Actually, I do a lot of vocals.
A lot of them, right? because I recognize your voice. I said, wait a minute, Kirk is singing too. You know, I didn't.
Yeah, I do a lot. You know, and you live. You know, when we do play live, normally Jamie does about 90% of them. Just you know, because his heavy voice and my heavy voice are very similar in Kingdom of Sorrow. Like how I sing in Crowbar compared to how he you know sings in Hatebreed are two different things. But it, within the context of Kingdom of Sorrow, his heavy vocals and my heavy vocals are very very similar. I can't even tell. Sometimes when I'm listening, I'm like, who is that?
I know. Very similar.
I usually do the more melodic stuff, you know, in Kingdom of Sorrow. But it works out great. I mean, you know, we're really, really very, very good friends. He's
awesome.
Really, you know, been great, you know, great to me. And you know,
this guy asked me, his name is Chris Cole, that if you guys going to ever cooperate with Hatebreed.
With the entire band, like Crowbar and Hatebreed touring, or
no, actually, maybe doing a project with Hatebreed instead of Kingdom of Sorrow.
Well, I mean, basically, that's what I'm doing because you know, Crowbar. I mean, I write 99% of the stuff, and Jamie pretty much writes all the guitar stuff and lyrics for Hatebreed. A lot of people don't know that.
Right.
He's I'm almost positive that almost everything is his with Hatebreed. So you do have a collaboration between basically Crowbar and Hatebreed, not the musicians themselves, but
right.
Me and Jamie as songwriters writing together.
So how are your sales of the reissues? You know, I know E1 just re-released your old albums.
Honestly, I have no idea.
You have no idea. You don't ask him.
No, not that. I'm concerned with the new record.
I mean, don't you get any royalty checks and the CD?
Well, I mean, they just came out a month and a half.
Oh, they just recently.
Yeah, they just came out.
So it's too soon to predict.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll see what's up. So hopefully I'll get a nice you know.
The paycheck, right? I know, but they're worth it, you know, because a lot of I keep saying that. Young generation, young kids do not know the past of new Crowbar, old Crowbar, and they need to find out your roots, you know, because if they find, they just buy your new album next year, they're going to miss a lot, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
You know, they got to find out where you fucking started, where it's all happened, you know, and then where it took you, where you're now at, so... There you have it. So I recommend just start going back, even if you fucking download, you know, at least to get an idea of the history of Crowbar. So where do you record at? Do you have a home studio? You recorded with Phil? Where are you guys recording your albums?
The Crowbar stuff, we did the new record at OCD Recording, which is... fairly new studio right in here in the, you know, like it's like 15 minutes from my house. We actually rehearse next door to the studio. It's the same building.
Oh, okay.
Very nice studio. We recorded the new record there. And Zeus, who did the first, you know, First Kingdom and, you know.
So what's it called? Zeus?
Well, Zeus mixed it for us.
Oh, okay.
He's done a lot of Hatebreed. He's done quite
that's a few. That's an engineer?
He is the he mixed it. Dwayne Simino from OCD was
okay.
The engineer for this record, but Zeus did the First Kingdom. He tracked it and mixed it, and he mixed the Second Kingdom.
Okay,
and he mixed this new Crowbar, and he just did that Murder Dolls CD. He's done a lot of stuff.
Oh, okay. So, what about the Down over there too, or
no, Down? We've been. Well, last record we recorded at three different studios out in L.A.
Uh-huh.
And Warren Riker did the Down 2 record and Over the Under for us.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I don't know what direction we're going to take with the new town.
Phil doesn't have his own home studio?
He does now. Like it used to just be really for demoing, but now he's pretty much got it where I think it's a proper studio for us to at least, I'm sure we'll have to mix it somewhere else. But
oh, cool. Maybe he can start, producing other bands, right?
Yeah, well, he's doing that with Housecore. He's got, you know, quite a few things coming out.
I know.
already out, you know, that he's producing.
So. How's your relationship with the labels? Have you ever been fucked over by any label?
By everyone I've been on.
Oh, my goodness.
That's kind of par for the course. I think that's what they're good at.
It's kind of an understatement, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So. I know you're a diehard metal fan. And any good shows you've been seeing lately, any albums you're looking forward to, and why are the ticket prices are so high now for going to shows? Maybe not your shows, but
right. And people still have to understand, you know, ticket prices are what they are because of all the overhead and of how many different people have their hand in that pot of money. You know, there's managers, there's booking agents.
Yeah.
There's, you know, the venues.
There's too many middle guys.
Exactly. It's, yeah. You know, like merchandise, for instance.
Yeah, I know.
People are like, Jesus Christ, why is it, you know, $30 for a T-shirt? Well, because the venue wants to take 25% of
it. And then
they pay somebody to sell it, and then they want to tax you on top of it.
Right.
And then, you know, by the time, you know, it'd be the same thing as selling it for $20.
Right.
At a regular, right. You know, like small show, or just selling it online for $20 or something. When everybody's got their hand in the pot, it really dilutes, you know,
yeah.
The money.
Makes sense for us, but for fans, you know, now the economy is the way it is. Nobody has any money, you know, and you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, I mean, expect the worst. If they show up at your gig, you'll be happy, even if they don't buy any merchandise sometimes. I'm like, at least there's some bodies in the venue.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know? And, you know, that's all they can afford. You know, and I understand it. I mean,
yeah,
people,
you know what I mean?
You know, to them, to come see a show is a special event. You
right.
know, I mean, if say a guy brings his girlfriend, he's
right, 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 right.
He buys her a ticket and he buys her some drinks.
Right.
I mean, it's very expensive, you know.
It is. I mean, by the time you're done now with the fucking parking, your car, $10, $20, and the drinks are $7, $10, and then get to the merch table, they're like thinking, T-shirt or beer? You know what I'm saying?
That's
it's a hard decision to make. So,
money for both.
Well, how much is what can Crowbar fans expect to see? Like, what is your ticket prices?
For the store depends on the venue.
Mm-hmm.
You usually $10 at the lowest and $20 at the highest. You know,
that's
depending
fucking
on the market
cheap.
We're playing.
And what's your merch prices? Like the T-shirts.
T-shirts are normally $20, like $25 for long sleeves. Hoodies are usually like about $30.
Okay, that's reasonable.
You know, yeah, stickers are like $3. You know,
yeah, right.
Like winter hats are like.
And the CDs are $12, $15.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
15 range. So it's very reasonable.
That's reasonable. Yeah. I mean, we don't see Crowbar very often. So people should fucking get to your shows. Your tour is coming up next week. So I would urge all the fans check out your site and to get the your tour dates. You know, nearby their homes or whatever. I'm actually looking forward to come see you in Jacksonville if I can make it. I gotta check it out. Yeah, I'm gonna try. I love you guys. You know, you guys are awesome. What's the difference touring in U.S. and Europe? You know, fan-wise, catering. Like, I'll give you an example. My guitarist, he's a new guy. Again, you know, he's a new kid in the block. Is worried about his rider. I mean, he tells me about, you know, what am I going to eat? What am I going to do? What am I going to shower? He's worrying about this shit. Then I can remember the far as like back in early 90s, you know, we didn't even have showers. We didn't have fucking no tour buses, you know. We travel around with a van with the trailer in the back hooked up, but we still do sometimes here, you know.
Yeah. Us too, with Crowbar we do here. I mean, down, of course, is a much bigger.
Of course, of course. But my question is, what is the difference, the U.S. and Europe? Catering,
I mean, in general, like I was saying, obviously this is absolutely no disrespect to the U.S. crowds at all.
Mm-hmm.
But in Europe, I think the one thing that's cool is if, I mean, this is why bands like Saxon and, you know, I just use them as an example because they're really not that popular in the U.S.
Yeah, more like maybe creators, you know.
Right, any of the, you know. The reason they're still popular in Europe is because when people like a band, when European people like a band, they like a band forever. They don't go, it's not just a hot flash.
Not a flavor of the month.
No, not at all.
No.
An American audience is, I mean, a band like Crowbar, really all of my bands, because none of the bands are that big. You know, it's. I think that everyone who likes us are really, you know, very dedicated fans.
Right.
You know, in Europe, I mean, I think
it's a different story because they know their metal so good.
Absolutely.
And they're very loyal.
Extremely loyal.
Extremely loyal.
And, you know, they're very knowledgeable and very loyal.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, it's. I think in general, you know, like in the U.S., depending on what's going on, you know, you get a lot of guys out at the bar. Say a single guy comes out, he's not going to buy any merch. He's not going to try to pick up a chick or whatever.
Right. Their agenda is different.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, his main priority is, okay, here's a band, I dig the music, or, you know, there's going to be a decent crowd at the show, it's going to be a little bit
of a I'll buy their merchandise later on, and then he walks out. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you know, so in Europe, I mean, they're lying. I mean, you know, you go...
It's a different story.
You peek out the window of the bus at 9 o'clock in the morning, and there's people waiting for shit.
They're still waiting, exactly.
So they're very diehard.
Yes,
you know,
yes, they are. They are. So, and they got the patches all over their jacket.
Oh, yeah, denim and leather, of course, you know.
And they have their tickets holding, and they don't want you even scratch it. They want you to autograph. They, I mean, cherish even the tickets. I know because we went to Poland. I mean, the kids, please do not bend my ticket.
Right.
Because I'm going to fucking frame it, you know. Oh my God! This is like a dream come true. These people are real, you know. These people
are absolutely real.
And the catering, fucking in Germany, you know, they hire these old mamas, grandmothers come in the kitchen and making homemade food, right?
They don't just give you a couple of shitty cold pizzas at the show. I mean, they make real dinner.
The real dinner in America, you get the Domino's.
Absolutely.
If you're lucky. I know. It's all about I don't know what it is, but maybe metal is not so really popular in America. It's still underground. I really do think it's still underground.
Well, like Crowbar, I mean, we're hoping to break to that next level.
Yes.
Obviously, you know, but. You know, I mean, the good thing about America to me is the convenience of touring here. I can use a telephone all day.
Yes, I know. It's
You know, I mean, it's everything's in English, so I can pick up a magazine or watch TV or whatever. I mean, it's definitely inconveniences.
Right.
To tour in Europe, you know, Australia. Well, not Australia because they do speak English. But, you know, in the other countries. There's definitely inconveniences, but the show itself makes up for it because the shows are so good.
Right, yes.
You know, it's...
Exactly. Exactly. I think unless you totally sell out and tour with somebody like maybe Limp Bizkit or Korn, like Demure is doing now, I don't know what the fuck they're doing, trying to gain, you know, mainstream fans, you know? And that's what's going to be. It's going to be underground shows, you know, Kirk, you know?
Absolutely. We're playing, you know, these venues are, you know...
Yeah, 300 to 500 people, you know?
And, you know, but I'm looking, you know, really forward to it. I'm very excited to leave.
Absolutely.
Practice was great tonight, you know, great rehearsal. Looking forward to getting out there.
Yeah, I saw a big interview in Disciple, whatever, that magazine. I get them for free every month.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so maybe it's going to help. And I'm going to spread the words as much as I can. Hopefully, you know, people show up your, you know, shows and support your music. Now, any places you haven't played, you want to, state or country?
South America is really the only place. I think I've been to 36 countries.
Okay.
But I have not been to South America.
How about Japan?
Been there once, but only for one show. But it was a great show. We played the Loud Park Festival in like a 16,000 seat venue.
Shit, 16,000, and you're talking about underground?
No. We went on right after Avenged Sevenfold, right before Slipknot. It was
okay. Now it explains.
Indoor, like they had two giant stages, and it was as soon as one band finished, the next band. What was it?
Was it a Sonic Festival?
It was called Loud Park Festival. It was in Tokyo.
Okay. I heard.
Very cool.
Yeah.
South America is the only really uncharted territory I haven't.
Yeah, I think you should start going there. Be Colombia, Brazil, you know, all these countries.
Sure.
You know, I think they fucking adore metal. Since you play with all these big metal bands and tours, anyone that you haven't played with that, you know, you would like to?
Not really, because I mean, you know, I've been lucky enough to tour with, but, you know, to actually be on a couple of tours with Metallica. We toured with Heaven and Hell twice.
We toured
with Megadeth. We played quite a few festivals with Motorhead.
Awesome.
Did you
ever meet Dio?
Yes, actually, in Australia, I don't know if you've been or not, but it's all fly dates, so. When we did a Canadian tour with him, and I did meet him. But when we did the dates in Australia, we would out every day. We would fly to the show with Heaven and Hell, and we would take the same shuttle bus. We'd stay at the same hotel. So, you know, I had the great pleasure of meeting, you know, Ronnie and seeing him every day, really. And we were flying from Sydney to Auckland, New Zealand. And the plane got delayed like 3 or 4 hours, and everybody was kind of hanging out at the you know,
How awesome is that?
it ended up like everybody was hanging out at the airport bar, and then little by little, people went off and got something to eat and went and show whatever, and it ended up being me and Ronnie for like an hour.
That's awesome.
Just chatting over drinks, and I'll never forget when we landed in Los Angeles. You know, he came up to me and you know, shook my hand, and he hugged. I went to go shake his hand. He hugged me, and he said, "God bless you, my son." You know, and I said, "Thank you, Ronnie." You know, and he was like, you know,
kind
of, you know, so he, that was the last words that.
Oh, you're gonna make me cry because I fucking love Dio. You know. Lots of tragedy in the music this year.
Yeah.
I don't know if it affected you as much as affected everybody, you know, in the metal scene, like the Peter.
The Steel thing really hit me hard because...
Which one, Peter?
Yeah.
Me too.
I never knew Peter well, but we played with Typo. You know, they were one of my... always have been one of my favorite bands. You know, I know the guys, you know, pretty damn well. And he died on my birthday. I was in Germany.
Oh, man. I know. It was a shocker. You know, I saw it on the Blabbermouth a couple times. I said, this got to be a joke, you know.
Right.
I know there was a couple times, like a couple years ago. You know, he always liked to fuck with people, the hoax.
He had it on the...
Yeah.
On, like, the website, like Peter Steele.
He died, you know. Yeah, exactly. I said, it's got to be another joke because I never expected the Peter fucking... You know, because I saw last year before, in my hometown, Florida, and we went to see them. It was awesome, great show. And hearing that, it just kind of shocked me, you know. It's really upset me. And then the Paul Gray from Slipknot, I don't know.
I mean, Dad played quite a few shows with Slipknot, you know, over the show in Japan. We did a lot of shows with Slipknot. Festivals in 2009, you know.
Right.
Download, and we played in Greece with them. We did quite a few festivals with Slipknot, and you know, ended up kind of, you know, mingling with the guys and being friends with them a bit. And great guys, and obviously a great, you know, band for what the, you know, doing what they do. And you know, that was a, I mean, they're all shockers. It's just like, oh my God, you know. And really, that had a big, profound impact on, you know, on my decision to turn my life around. I mean, I can't sit here and say I'm never going to have a drink again, but...
Yeah. Oh, man, it's a shocker. I got another DJ at our Metal Messiah Radio. His name is Kenny DJ Bolger. He said to me, he's from Louisville, Kentucky. I guess he met him one time. He said he may not probably remember me. But it was a great meeting him, you know, a long time ago. And he just said, please ask him, you know, how does it feel now going to AA and stuff that he feels more energized, more put together, how hard it was for him not to do the, you know, Ozfest Kingdom of Sorrow show.
It was very difficult not to do the Kingdom stuff, but, you know, it was in... my best interest, and you know, I know Phil had called Jamie, and they were just like, "Look, he needs to switch, get his life together, get his priorities straight. You know, he needs to get himself healthy."
And it was actually type of negative guitar player replaced you,
yeah,
right?
Kenny Hickey, yep.
Yeah, so
which is cool because you know, I mean, I'm good friends with Kenny. I've known him for a long time. And, you know, we're old party buddies and whatnot, but, you know, it was cool that he did it. I mean, you know, I was upset to let any, you know, fans down, obviously.
Right.
People have to understand. I mean, they think we're immortal, or they think we're, you know, made of iron or whatever, and that, you know, it's still, I mean, they don't understand, you know, how difficult it is. I mean, I went to Europe 4 times between April and July, twice with Crowbar, which were 24, 25 show and a row tours, and twice with Down doing some festivals. And, you know, it's very, you know, it's very difficult. It's very easy in this business to get where your alcohol becomes just from drinking beer to relax to becoming abusive and whatnot, you know. But, you know, it was in my best interest to sit out the Ozfest.
It your decision or the band said?
No, it was Jamie and Phil together saying, look, don't do this. And I'm like, I'll be fine, you know.
Right.
And they're like, no, you need to get healthy.
Really?
And so that was kind of like, you know, I spoke to both of them, and, you know, we talked about Pete Steele. We talked about Paul Gray. You know, we talked about all these situations and how, you know, we talked about, you know, Zach Wilde getting sober. We talked
about
all these different things, and we're just like, I'm like, you know what, dudes, y'all are correct. You know, I know y'all have my best interests at heart.
Right.
So
was there ever a wake-up call for you?
There's been a million wake-up calls, you know.
Many?
And that's,
like a driving drunk, waking up somewhere?
Oh, yeah, you name it. Everything.
Really?
Like, wow, let me go check the car. How did I get home? You know. I mean, you know, and it you know, it's funny, but it's very sad, you know.
I know, like
I don't mind you laughing, you know.
No, it's kind of sometimes funny when you think back and say, well, it could have turned out to be a tragic, you know, like
exactly. So,
you know what I'm saying? You're getting in the behind a wheel, or you may kill somebody,
yep.
You know,
sure.
God forbid. But for me, it's like when I come back from the club or drinking, if I know that I'm trying to get into my neighbor's house, I'm trying to open their home, then I know I'm drunk.
Right, the wrong beer. that's happened. I mean, you name it, it's happened.
I know.
And it's just like, I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm so fortunate that, you know, nothing worse happened, and, you know, knock on wood, and, you know, it's just, you know, it's one of those things that was just like, you know what, it's time. I mean, as I say all the time, people are constantly like, oh, you know, congratulations on your sobriety. I'm like, thank you, but don't congratulate me.
Yeah, it's not a congratulations. It's basically...
fall off every day.
Yeah, it's a struggle. It's a struggle.
It's a very difficult struggle.
Life is a struggle. Yeah, nothing is easy, you know. The addictions are extremely difficult to deal with. I mean, I smoke many times. I try to quit. I don't know what the fuck they put in this fucking cigarettes, but it's fucking
something
addictive.
You're not be able to quit, so you keep on buying it.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, they can increase as much as they want. I'll never quit smoking, but I'll quit buying something else. Maybe I'll quit buying food, but I'll still buy cigarettes. You know, it's horrible. But yeah, exactly. It's addictive. I don't do drugs. You know, I've been in bands all my life. You know, just like you. And I never abuse anything. I drink moderately. I would not, you know, if I drink too much, I'll stay home or I will let somebody else drive a car, whatever. But I made many foolish things at the shows. Maybe I got drunk. Thank God that I had manager, tour manager will tell me, hey, IPEC, you know, you're getting drunk and don't do it. I will pull my shirt off, show my titties, which is a very bad thing. You know, the fans are looking up to you, admire you, and now you're falling on the floor. It's looking bad, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know.
Yeah, you know.
It's just, you know, it gets...
It doesn't look good. Just, yeah.
Yeah.
So then you realize, and the next day you wake up, you feel like shit, and you don't remember anything, you know. Yeah. You might have said something, you know, and it's the worst thing is that your demons comes out when you're drunk.
Totally.
Totally. You start fucking telling somebody off. You dearly love, you know, your band members and your, you know,
yeah,
fucking...
Yeah, friends. Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you don't know what the fuck you're saying. So that I can completely understand, you know, it's very, very bad feeling. But, you know, whatever it takes, Kirk, whatever it takes, honey. You know, even if you chew gum all day long, if whatever you have to do.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, so far it's you know, struggle, but, you know, I'm dealing with it, and that's all that counts. So it's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. What's your set like for the tour?
We're doing, let's see, off of... We do Subversion off of Obedience Through Suffering. We do Allah Had I Gave, High Rate Extinction, Self-Inflicted.
Oh, good. You're doing the High Rate Extinction?
Yeah, yeah. We do I Have Failed. We just picked that one up again off of Crowbar, Crowbar. Let's see. We do Planets Collide, of course. We do...
Slave No More?
Sometimes. I mean, it's like we have, you know, that like with the new record that I'm going to have about... this is a 9th full-length record, so it's going to be, you know, like...
So you're going to be like a few songs from each album, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like, we're picking up The Only Factor off of Tom Hill's Nothing.
Now, you guys had, like, a couple cover tunes. Are you going to do it or no?
No, because we have so many originals, you know.
Yeah.
Literally, I'll go back and listen to something and be like, Jesus Christ, I don't even remember.
I know, Remember Tomorrow. I made it in the Let's Up.
Yeah, Remember Tomorrow came out. That was actually pretty cool.
I know,
like
it was very good. So you're going to have a great, you know, bunch of songs from each album's combination. So
yeah, totally.
What's like a 2 hours set list?
About an hour and 15 minutes.
Hour and 15 minutes? You guys...
Yeah. It depends on how many bands we have on the bill with us and everything else. You know,
right.
I mean, with Down, because there's so many different styles of music, we have like mellow, bluesy ones, acoustic ones, everything. You know, Down, when we were doing... It was an evening with Down. We had like a movie that we played before. That was our opening band, which was like an hour long, and then it was Down. You know, we'd play like up to 2 hours and 20 minutes a night, you know.
Fuck.
But that was just, you know. But it, with Down, you can do that because there's a lot of different styles of music. There's more upbeat ones, there's regular old rock and roll ones, there's more metal. You know, some of them are more metal, some of them are really mellow, you know.
Good. When you're, so, I mean, you know, when you're headlining, obviously, you're going to play your best songs and... And you have the, but the new album is not out, so, but are you still going to play the new songs?
Yeah, we're playing two new ones.
Two new ones?
Yeah, two new ones that'll be on the record, and then, you know, just to give them a taste of it, and then, you know, like,
we'll probably do the same thing when we go to the UK in January. Probably keep the same two for them right now, you know, for right now until the record comes out. But
now, if you know, any of them are on your MySpace, the fans can hear your new songs?
Not yet. What we're doing, I think next Tuesday, I think it is, the 23rd.
I want to check it out.
Are releasing like an we're releasing one song
on iTunes.
Mm-hmm. On iTunes, where it's like if you order this song, then you get the rest of the complete album off of iTunes for like a, you know, like a sale price.
What's the name of the song?
It's called The Cemetery Angels.
Oh, I was hoping, because I was going to ask you, are you still going to title your album The Cemetery Angels? Because it sounds so fucking awesome. I love that title.
No, it's very cool, and the lyrics are very good. But actually, the title of the record is Sever the Wicked Hand.
Okay. How is Lady Gaga's new album? I got to ask you this, because I'm just like a completely disgusted with the music scene. You know, the bands are struggling selling albums and the shows, but this lady is just fucking copies, you know, Madonna, whatever, and she makes millions of sales. And I don't get it. Maybe you can explain to me, who is Lady Gaga, and do you like her?
I do like her, actually. The reason I like her is because she's a classically trained pianist, and she writes all her own music and all her own lyrics, and she doesn't pitch fix her voice, and she sings live for real.
Really?
She's actually, yes.
I'm missing something. I gotta check it out.
No, I mean, it's not. I mean, it's catchy, poppy, run-of-the-mill, you know, sounds like everybody else stuff.
Right.
Formulated, whatnot. But she actually, I appreciate her as a musician and an artist because she is talented. It's not like Britney Spears or someone where somebody writes all your songs for
no,
you.
No, I'm actually, if you go
she's
back...
Really writing her own music, writing her own lyrics, doing her real singing. It's not lip-syncing. It's not about, you know, 20 people dancing in the background. And, you know, obviously she takes stuff from Madonna and whatnot. It takes, you know, I mean...
No, it's actually, go back to... different bands.
John, or, you know, fucking Freddie, whatever. I mean, you know, it's just, I mean, she takes the flamboyant outfits and stuff, you know. It's just, it's for a new generation of kids. But if, put it this way, if she didn't write her own music and, you know, wasn't a real musician, and if she lip-synced, I would not hate her, but I would really be aggravated that she's as successful as she is. But the fact that she does all of that stuff, and in the interviews that I have read, she's very down to earth and really, you know, seems like a cool girl, you know. So therefore, I do respect her at least as a musician, you know.
Wow. Okay. I trust your opinion, but you know, I'm a totally metalhead, so
well,
I don't
well,
really.
Me too. But I mean, you know, anybody. I mean, regardless of the genre of music, anybody who is that successful that creates their own, you know, their own character, that writes their own music, their own lyrics, and whatnot. You know, I mean, I'm
really?
Not, you know, hey, I'd like some of her money, don't get me wrong. You know, it sucks being broke all the time, but
right.
You know, at least I can respect that she is a musician in the sense that, you know, she does, you know,
okay.
Piano very well. And
all right.
So.
Very
and
cool.
Then, it's a big deal to even sing live for real these days. So, you know, the fact that she sings live for real and then writes her own shit makes, you know...
Okay, I just wanted to ask you this because, you know, I'm not too impressed, but that's okay.
No, it's all good.
Yeah, I still dig my Pat Benatar, you know.
Yeah, I like that.
Heart, you know, those bands, I definitely into it. What would you do if you weren't doing the music? Do you have any idea?
Sports.
What's that?
Something to do with sports.
Sports?
Yeah, you know, like weight training or something, you know, something.
Oh, really? Can you imagine you're doing that all day long?
Well, I mean, yeah, I could see it. I mean,
really?
That's like, other than music, you know, I'm a really big sports fan, and, you know, I could totally,
You know? Yuck. I hate sports.
it depends on what you're going to. I mean, my dad was such a sport. It still is such a sports fanatic. That's what I grew up with. And, you know, when I was a kid, I really excelled at football and all the sports that I played and did really well.
You will say, you know, more like I only know music, and without anything not involving music, I wouldn't be part of it. But, right. You know, what do I know?
But the question was, what would I do if I weren't from, you know, weren't in music? So
I just can't imagine.
Music, that is my first love, you know, but
right.
Sports would be another thing.
Right.
I couldn't imagine, you know, being in an office job or anything like that. It would have to be something, you know, where I just something different, you know.
Yeah, I know exactly. I just can't imagine, but you know, we didn't know anything other than music. I don't know. It would be hard. I don't like anything but music. I just don't like anything. And yeah, seriously. You know what I mean? It's like even if I'm sleeping, I'm dreaming about music. I'm thinking about lyrics. You know, it's just that's the way I feel. You know, I'm in the car. I'm listening music. I don't like TV too much. I don't like talking to people too much. I just listen to music. I think takes me to another world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally does.
You know, when you're listening music, you're just dreaming. You're flying. You're swimming. You know, all that shit. You can actually go with the music, whatever you're listening. I think it's awesome feeling. Since you're a big fan of the metal show, I talked to you about that before. The other VH1 programs. So, what do you watch? Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp, Bret Michaels.
Kate, my girl likes
Kate
Michaels.
Okay.
We watch his show. We watch I don't even know what channel it's on, but we watch Married to Rock or whatever it is.
Oh yeah, that fucking Married to the Famous Rock Star.
Yeah, like Duff McKagan's wife.
Yeah. Did you watch the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp?
I've seen like one episode. I basically like for me, I'm easily, you know.
The Ace Frehley showed up. The Boris Kulik. Who else? Michael Anthony. He shows up, and they all hate the bands, but they can't fucking say anything bad. You know, I was like laughing my ass off. You know, the shitty garage bands, they turn them into a rock band. So I was wondering, how about those Rehab? Celebrity Rehab shows.
Yeah, I watch those. I watch Addicted, and I watch Intervention, and I watch, you know.
Did you watch the one with the Skid Row ex-drummer and Allison Chain bass player?
Oh, yeah, the Allison Chain. Yeah, well, I saw the Allison Chain ex-bass player or whatever.
he's really wild, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you make all your income through the music, or I know you told me that you don't really have time for other jobs, so obviously
it's either get another job and not have time for all the music, or just do as much music as possible.
Right. So
bands.
But is it enough to make you feel live comfortably?
It comes and goes. It's sometimes it's feast or famine. You know.
You can pay your bills.
Yeah. I mean, yeah? I own a house, and you know. Support my child, you know, from my ex-wife and whatnot. So it's difficult, but you know, I get by. That's all that counts.
Exactly. So the Crowbar has been a long time, and it's your baby.
Absolutely.
And what about the numerous lineup changes? The reasons, you know, like what happened to your bass player Todd?
He just wanted to get out of the music business. You know, he had quit drinking and smoking pot and whatnot, and just kind of got where he just wanted to move on with, you know, with his life.
Maybe he should have stayed with the drugs or whatever, drinking.
Right. No, I mean, he's doing well, you know. And, I mean, mainly with Crowbar, it's always been a situation of there's not a lot of money to go around. So, you know, people would basically get tired and say, fuck this, you know, or if they're married or something, the wife would be like, look, you need a real job, blah, blah, blah. You know, so, you know, I mean, that's why I'm in three bands.
I know. Do you keep in touch with your old band members? The ones are
a lot of them I do, yes. I mean, I don't have a falling out with any of them. You know, it's just...
Did anybody leave on a bad note?
Not really. Everybody just left because they just left.
Oh, really? Nobody, like, nowadays, like, it's a trend, you know, like, band member decides to leave the band, but they can't confront the band member, so what they do is they text, message you, fuck you, I'm out of here, or email you. I have another interview with somebody else was telling me, and I had the same experience with my old band members. They, I mean, we've been together for fucking 8 years, three albums, and we come home from Nam, they had a great time, and next day I get a big fucking 3 pages long email. Everything, it was wrong with me, but nothing about music. It's just me. So I'm just saying, you know, is it like a trend that is going around? You can't pick up the phone and say, look, I'm out of here, you know, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, texting and email is an easy way out. You don't have to actually speak to anybody, so.
But that kind of makes it very impersonal and kind of cowardish way to get out, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think so.
So you don't, you've never had anybody like that doing that?
No. I mean, it's always been like a mutual thing. Like, look, you know, you're not having fun anymore, or you need, you know. You need to make more money with another job or whatever it is. But nobody's actually really been kicked out of Crowbar.
Uh-huh.
They just left, you know, because they wanted to move on with their life or something different or whatever, you know. I mean, not everyone are like, you know, in this, are lifers, you know, no pun intended.
Right. Well, that's good.
It's not cut out for everyone to be doing this into their, you know, 40s and now close, you know.
Right, exactly.
Closing in on 50, you know.
It doesn't matter, the life goes on.
Not everybody can be Lemmy, you know.
No. You know, some people really don't fucking feel like doing this forever, you know, that's for sure.
No, totally, it's difficult. It's very difficult,
you know.
So.
Especially if you have wives and kids, you know.
Yeah.
You have any advice for new upcoming bands? Like a lot of young bands always complaining. The first thing they do, why do I have to sell tickets for open ups for a major band? Why do I have to fucking, I don't get a dressing room? You know, because sometimes I want to manage bands, I want to help them out, but then when I get these kind of questions and then bitch moaning, I feel like telling them to fuck off and pay your dues and then come back, grow up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's the advice would be pay your dues for sure. Make sure that this is what you really want to do more than anything in the world. Because if not, you will give up and you won't get anywhere. You know, persevere, keep at it.
I mean, when you started out, tell me, was it easy as it is now? Was it?
No, it was way harder. I mean,
harder, right?
It was like, you know, hanging up, stapling flyers on telephone poles and handing out flyers.
Right. Even Motley Crue back in the days, I saw them in L.A. Passing out flyers all day long.
Yep. That's how we did it. You know, word of mouth.
Right.
Street level advertising. And, you know, it's different.
Play local shows. You know, what?
Try to build a local following.
Right.
You know, I mean, we worked, you know, we all worked in my first few bands. We all worked day jobs constantly to pay real bills.
Mm-hmm.
And then cause we put everything we made into the band or, you know, whatever.
Kirk, we didn't even have fucking computers and shit, internet, to send somebody flyer out, you know. You have to actually deliver manually.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? Now they have the best tool. Facebook, Shitbook, MySpace, Fuckplace. And name it, and these young kids, you know, and then the Pro Tools, you know. Now you don't even have to fucking go to a studio. You don't even have to be on label. You can actually record yourself and make an album, right?
And sell it on the internet.
Yeah, sell it on the internet or YouTube, iTunes, whatever, CD Baby. So the young bands, they have don't have the same appreciation that we have, you know what I mean, back in the days. I mean, we actually went to the store.
Every band got a CD
right
on their own label with a real cover, and I mean, mm-hmm. it was a big deal to have a demo tape.
Oh, absolutely. You had to actually fucking design your artwork, put in the fucking pictures and everything, and now they think it's just going to it's download and put it on the iPod, and there you go.
Yep.
You know, it's a different life, different mentality. So I guess they don't get it. My point is they don't get it. They think somebody's going to hand it to them. Here's the show. Here's the tour bus and tour. It ain't going to happen like that. You know, I don't know what they're thinking of. So I just wanted to get your opinion on that, you know?
Yeah, sure.
How long, a lot of people asking me, ask Kirk, how long you hooked up with Phil. I know he produced your early Crowbar albums, and you've been, a good childhood friend with Phil. They're also, you know, interested in Phil as well.
We've been friends since, you know, young men, I won't say kids, like, you know, we weren't like children, but young
teenagers.
Teenagers have been friends since. You know, we have a very special, very close understanding kind of relationship. I mean, you know, I might not speak to him every. I speak to him every. You know,
right.
Every week or two.
Now, you knew him before he was in Pantera?
Absolutely. In fact, the day he told me he was going to join Pantera, me and him had went and played a football game with some other friends, just a touch football game at a playground. And he told me, like, look, man, I'm going to try out for Pantera. We knew who Pantera were, you know, down in Louisiana. They were really big in Texas, and, you know, and we,
right.
you know, we do have great Diamond.
Did you know them as well, Dimebag?
Yeah,
and
I didn't know them, but I had seen them in Houston with Terry Glaze, their old vocalist, before.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, when they were glam band, yeah.
Yeah, I'd seen them, and, you know, I actually met them and talked to them, you know, whatever. They didn't remember me, of course, but, no, and then when Phil joined, you know, like, I would go up every 2 months to Dallas and, you know, Fort Worth, and I would hang out with the guys. I mean,
so what was your first impression of Pantera? Did you think they were going to get this big?
Yeah, I knew they were great. I mean, I'll say this, you know, like, I had the great privilege of watching them. You know, literally, I would ride, like, in a car with one of Phil's friends, and we would follow while Vinnie Paul drove an old beat-up red Grand Prix, I think it was red, in the van. We'd follow him, and I'd hang out with, you know, with the guys and whatever. I mean, I got the privilege of watching them graduate from the Grand Prix to the white van,
right,
and ride in the van with them while they're
right.
still doing cover songs, you know. Then I got to see them when they were doing, you know, two, you know, like they do like an hour set Friday, an hour set Saturday of all originals, basically throw a few covers in, or, you know, maybe a few hours, you know, set. It's been so long ago.
Uh-huh.
To getting signed, to playing small clubs, to graduating, to selling out arenas, you know, so it's
so
it
you were
great.
Like amazed. Oh my goodness! My best friend.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, you know, wow, you know. And I mean, one thing I'll say, you know, I always knew that, you know, that Phil in particular was gonna.
Phil was very over motivated, aggressive. You know, he.
I mean,
you know.
I always knew, you know, that he was, you know, was gonna go somewhere.
Yeah, and he's a complete full package, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, attitude.
He brought that extra spark that Pantera, the musicianship was there.
Right.
With Pantera, but Phil really molded.
The front man, yeah, of course.
And for our generation, you know, he's the best, you know, front man.
Yes.
And fucking in metal. And
oh, absolutely.
And with him and stand on stage with him and laugh and cut up and have fun, you know, while we're on stage, while we're off stage, whatever.
Right, right.
You know,
I mean,
very
a 90s generation, all the angry, rageful fans can relate to him. I think that's what made him really popular.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big. And were you shocked when you heard the Dimebag was murdered?
I was. I got a phone call about less than 10 minutes after it happened.
Who called
you? Actually, my friend Eddie Muscles, we call him Eddie Muscles, Map was with...
Oh, with Davini and them.
No, he was actually with... someone else's manager, like, fucking...
Not the hell,
Evanescence or someone.
Okay.
And that manager got a phone call from somebody else, and he called. He called and told me. And then I immediately called Phil and Rex, and I stayed on the phone with Rex for the whole night.
They were shocked, right?
I mean, totally crushed and shocked.
Oh, my God. That was
and
the worst thing.
I spoke to Phil and Rex both for hours that night, and, you know.
That's the biggest tragedy. I mean, I don't know what the fuck they were doing in that shitty club. I'm always wondering.
Crowbar are playing. I've already played that club five or six times.
You played that club?
We're playing that club on this tour.
Oh, my God.
Troy, who works for Crowbar.
They're still open?
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping to God that they move the stage to the other side of the venue out of respect and made some kind of memorial. I mean, I wasn't going to do it. And my friend Troy Bergeron that works for Crowbar and helps tour manage and everything with us, he called Rhea, Dimebag's...
Right, girlfriend.
Said, do you have a problem, with us doing our Rosavilla? Does it make you feel weird? And she said, no, So, we're just going to turn it into like a dime night and, make a celebration,
Yeah? Are you going to play any dime song or...?
I can't play any of that.
Oh,
okay. Fucking good.
Really?
But I can, bits and pieces, whatever. I've never tried to learn it actually. But he did, I had the great pleasure many a times of sitting in the room with Dom or sitting on his back porch, and him and I just, playing
now,
together.
I know Phil is not talking to Vinny, but how about you? Do you talk to Vinny? Are you friends?
I don't speak to Vinny, but I obviously have no ill feelings,
right.
Nothing. Negative toward the man, I respect the hell out of him, and, I hope that one day he can speak to Phil. I mean, I know Phil and Rita have been speaking, which I think is a great thing.
You think someday maybe they'll rehash and,
I think so.
They'll rehash.
I never thought that, honestly, I've always been cool since Don's, murder.
Right.
I've always had a good relationship with Rita.
Right.
But, Vinny, I haven't spoken to since then. But, like I say, I have no ill feelings whatsoever toward
that's
Vinny.
That's a shame.
I'm just so happy for him, honestly, that he's, back playing.
Do you worry when you do shows, some freak going to come out and some...
You know what? Right after that, we went on tour with Hatebreed, actually, in the UK, less than 2 months from the from when Don was murdered, and it was a little weird at first,
right?
But no, I really don't worry about
it. You don't worry about it, right? I know right now, that after I think a dime, they started doing this check, the body search, and I think they should continue doing
down,
that.
Down is very, very strict.
Yeah.
Give me a couple minutes, please.
Yeah, it's almost over.
It's cool.
Yeah,
but
so
down is very strict, body search.
Right, good,
bond,
good. I think they should, because
have to. I mean, we
Phil is involvement, right?
In our band,
right.
So it's very. We take it very seriously, and that's the way it should be.
Now let me ask you this: I'm a big fan of Death, Chuck Schuldiner Band. Are you?
Or yeah, the early Death I was really into.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a very, very tragic as well. The Chuck Schuldiner died.
Right.
He's from Florida, and a good friend of mine, Richard Christie, the drummer, good friend of mine, and was in his band for a long time, and he always tells me about the stories. He had this brain tumor. I mean, this is how fucked up is American healthcare system. They couldn't operate him because he needed a $1 million surgery money. His mom could only come up with a $100,000 credit card. I mean, how fucked up is that?
It's horrible.
Yeah, it really is horrible. We lost a really a talented man, young musician, and it just like, you know, everything else, I believe a couple other musicians had the same thing. You know, it's how ironic is that? Anything is you put your band related to death, like Testament, Chuck Billy had that little while. I think
he had the cancer for a while.
And then
and he looks great. I saw him briefly in Finland.
Over
the summer, and he looks great. You know, the band's doing fantastic. Mm-hmm. He's a really good guy. You know, I'm very, very, very happy for him.
You're a fan of Testament?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Any new bands that you like? What other bands? What other type of music you listen? Like, do you like Norwegian, European black metal, death metal kind of music? Like Gorgoroth? What's the other one? Behemoth. Another guy is.
I appreciate it all. It's really. I'm more old school. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a Priest, Maiden, Motorhead.
Yeah, me too. But I also like the new stuff.
Zeppelin. No, I do. I mean, there's actually a band from Chico, California called Armed for... I always fuck this up. Armed for Apocalypse.
Okay. Apocalypse. Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, I'm friends with those guys, and they opened up the shows we did with Sepultura, and they were great. You know, they're big Crowbar fans, and you know, I like the style very much. But you know, I don't really check into, you know, many of the new bands, and I'm more old school. You know, I'm more
buy
the new Saxon record when it comes out than I would.
Right. You don't discriminate, though, right?
No, not at all. I like all styles.
All styles, right?
I like one type of music. It's called good music.
Good. Thank you.
I mean, at heart, I'm a metalhead, but I like anybody that you know, anybody that's good, whatever genre, you know, they happen to play.
Good, so good. I hope you check my band out, the Wicked Witch.
I definitely will.
Yeah, definitely. Any last words?
Yeah, go buy the new Crowbar album or I'll kill you.
I thought you're a loving guy.
Yeah, I am.
Okay. The website is www.crowbarmusic.com.
Correct.
And then
myspace.com/crowbar.
Right.
And we have a Twitter account or whatever that is. I have no idea what it even is.
Okay.
We have one. So
and what about Facebook?
We have a Facebook page as well.
Okay. And then we have the www.down/nola.com.
It's actually down-nola, like the, you put in between phone number, you know, like down-, not slash.
Right. And
you're down-nola.com.
Okay. And then your tour dates, when you're kicking off?
We begin in Panama City on Friday the 26th, 1 week from this Friday.
And what state?
Florida, Panama City.
Panama City. And then next day?
I think Savannah, Georgia, and then Jacksonville, I think, is on the Sunday.
Jacksonville is the Sunday?
Correct.
We're going to let the Kirk go, and everybody wants to hear Kirk's music. Please go to visit his website and check out his tour dates. And Kirk, thank you so very much for this opportunity. And we're looking forward to hear your new album. And have a happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, this is Kirk Winstein from Crowbar Down in Kingdom of Sorrow. You are on IPEX Witching Hour on Metal Messiah Radio.
All right, Metal Messiah Radio, dysfunctional family and friends. Finally, we came to the end of the show. Fuck me. What a night. You know, this man has so many music, so many bands, and I can't go on and on and on and talk about it. So if you want to fucking check out his music, again, go to his site, crowbarmusic.com. And please, you know, check out his tour dates coming up. Next week, they're going on tour for a month. And check out the dates. And if you see him at the venues nearby you, go tell him that you heard the interview and heard his music on IPEX Switching Hour. Maybe grab a t-shirt for me, motherfuckers. I deserve that. I gave you a fucking big history on Crowbar. Next week, same time, same place, different topic. Now, you all stay metal!